This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You've pissed me off today, Christopher.
I don't care. Why is that?
Because you went to Winchester. Mm-hmm. And all day, I've had half a daily A Little Doggy Maybe going through my head, the song that you probably won't remember.
No,
Propping up the bar at the Winchester Club.
Sure.
And I'm thinking of Dave and Minder.
Yeah. I know the theme tune to Minder. It's a great theme tune, isn't it?
If you want to change your situation. Yeah. Written by Dennis Waterman's brother.
That was deeply upsetting.
Yes. So that's the first minute we won't include.
I've got a good idea.
Let's get on with the show.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Alexa, play Back of the Nest podcast.
Playing Back of the Nest, CPFC podcast, from Amazon Music.
Back of the Nest, now on your Alexa device and Amazon Music.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest match report. I'm Chris Hambling and I'm joined today by Nick Gillard and nobody else because Simon Pizzi is pissed. Basically your joke, wasn't it, Nick?
You just stole it. How are you doing, Chris? You had a nice day out in the country?
Oh, I had a wonderful day out, an absolutely wonderful. Do you know, it was one of those things. I went to Winchester this morning for a market. My partner in particular likes the farmers markets and stuff like that. It's a nice way to get some local fruit and veg and like farm meats and things like that. It's obviously costs a little extra at times, but it's a nice way of getting some nice food, right? So
things like that.
Yeah, things like meat. Like,
oh, okay.
Like other foods. but anyway, so we went to Winchester and there was sort of a moment where it wasn't as big a market as usual, so we kind of thought, well, we had a plan to go and get some lunch at a place called Pie Carumba. You like that, Nick, because it's a pun?
And it's pie.
Yeah, and it's
pie. Is it as good as Sweeney Todd's in Reading, though? That's the thing.
It's better. Sweeney Todd's is great, but Pie Carumba is better. I heartily recommend it. But anyway, but it wasn't open yet, so I'm like, okay, well, need to kill a bit of time. And it was just this bit of a random decision. I pulled up a map on my phone. I thought, we'll go to a coffee shop, but not a well-known one. We'll just go and sit and have a coffee and wait for the shop to open at midday. And I picked a cafe called Proudfoot & Co., something like that. I'll look it up as I talk. But anyway, and it just said on Apple Maps or whatever, it said it was a cafe, so I expected to go there and get a coffee. But it was a really quite unique place. It's the sort of place that you don't really like. If you deliberately sort of researched and found it, it would have been an incredible find, but to randomly find it, I don't necessarily take credit for that, but it's a really, really nice place. It basically seems to have been set up by a guy who was massively into foraging, like literally foraging, and kind of researched a bunch of stuff around old British recipes, for food and drinks, like British spices and stuff like that, and created it's essentially a bar, but it's nothing's alcoholic there, and there's a couple of things that have coffee in them, but it's like botanicals, but British botanicals. So you go there and you have they use these sort of syrups created from British herbs and spices and stuff, and you have a drink, and it's I can't really explain how amazing an experience it was. It's not cheap, but it
isn't good for a broadcaster not being able.
No,
to
no, I do. Yeah, that's it. That's why I'm an amateur, because I don't have the skills to make it professional. But if you ever happen to be in Winchester, look up Proudfoot and Co. Their tagline is "For the bold and curious." For the bold and curious.
Is that why they've got syrups?
You've ruined my joke. I was going to say they should have changed it to "for the bald and confused," because that's basically how I found it. So, and I don't have hair. So, you know, there you go. Thanks, Nick. You ruined my whole run up to a joke.
You didn't see it coming from 6 miles away, though. Come on.
Yeah. It's always a shame when we have to do a podcast just you and me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Still, yeah. We'll get through it, you know, together. How about you? How you been?
Yeah, I've been all right. Youngest has got GCSEs this week, so it's mainly been around making them feel happy and just spoiling them a bit so they can concentrate on their revision.
That's really
27
nice.
Exams. It's a lot, isn't it?
Oh, wow. That seems way too many. How's that happened?
I don't know. Blame Michael Gove. But they did had their last netball match of the season yesterday. They finished top of the league, beat Crystal Palace, and she plays for Eclipse Netball Club, who are based in Beckenham. For the thirds in the second division, and they've gone up to the first division, and the second team have got relegated to the third division. So I don't know whether it will be a demotion by going up to the second team, which is essentially a better team, but in a lower division. I'm confused by it all.
Yeah, I didn't follow that, so but we'll let the listeners pick the bones of that one, unless Mikey cuts it out for confusion reasons. He won't. Shall we talk a bit of football though, Nick? I'm glad you're doing all right. But we had a pretty decent performance. Palace winning 2-0 against Bournemouth, obviously. Both goals from Eberechi Eze. And it wasn't the greatest of games at the beginning. It took a little while to get going. It sort of felt a little bit like two teams that are safe going through the motions, but Palace were always the better side for sure. And then just a couple of moments of magic just really lit it up. And I mean, the second half was definitely a stronger performance. It was, it was sort of quicker, more intense. Came out with real intent in the second half, and in a way, getting only the one goal was a bit of a shame, but Winning the game overall 2-0, it was a richly deserved win. But there are some talking points, and there are a lot of things to kind of really sort of pull apart in terms of what does the future look like, and the performances of the likes of Eze and Elisa. What does the summer look like there? The rumours are already starting, particularly for Elisa. I think the managerial situation is going to come up again for sure. But I do want to, I have to say, I do want to start with the kind of the strangest moment of the game, which was you've called it Anderson Balboa. It's not enough of a pun there. There's not really enough of a pun, is there? You've just given him the same surname as Rocky Balboa of the fictional.
It was a toss up between that and Creed, just to bring it up to date, really.
There's got to be a better joke in there. Well, maybe
listeners can tweet us.
Yeah, if you can either
with a better punchline. If only Punction had done it.
Yeah, well, yeah. But he didn't, did he? So several years too late. But yeah, really weird that two corners in a row, and the second one that came in. I meant to go back and have a look and see whether there was a coming together of any kind in the first corner. To kind of explain what happened, but look, from your perspective, Nick, rather than give my opinion straight away, what was your take on the incident which involved a clenched fist from Anderson and a broken nose for Jefferson Lerma?
Well, the funniest thing was that there were reports on Twitter that the Bournemouth managers said they've had penalties given for less, and I'm thinking, well, it's in your own area, you donut.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, does it? Yeah, you can't give a penalty up the other end because you got fouled in your own penalty area. It doesn't work that way.
No, only at junior school when you're playing with kids who don't know the rules.
Yeah.
It was weird because I didn't really see what happened at the game because it's at the other end of the pitch. But if you're looking back at the replays, he wasn't even looking at him, was he?
No, it's an odd one, right? And you can read too much into certain situations, right? And sometimes you can, I'm going to say it, right? We got given the benefit of a doubt, which I happen to think was exceedingly generous. When I saw the first replay of it, I was like, what have you done? Like, it really felt like he was, you know, you've seen it before where people have categorically said, like, he has done that because he wants to finish his season early, right? You do that, you get a 3-4 game ban if you punch somebody in the face, and he can go off on holiday and have an extended break, right? Because he's not going to play again that season. And it really, I thought it felt like that. It felt like it had just had a moment. He's like, yeah, not much left to play for. I need to chill for a few days. But yeah. It was just madness. It was absolute madness. But, you know, I can, all the arguments, right? So he hasn't swung his arm. He's, you know, you can't send somebody off for clenching their fist and somebody connecting. He's not looking at him. Like, let's, you know, unless he has the medical condition of tunnel vision, he can still see Jefferson Lerma, right? He can still see him, like, even though he's not looking directly at his face in the middle of his eye. He's in his peripheral vision, right? They're tussling for the ball. Lerma's grabbing him. Lerma is a pain, right? He's that kind of a player. Every time he's played against us, he's annoyed the hell out of me because he's just one of those players. He's constantly fouling. You know, we've got a bit of history with him, you know, being involved in that rotational fouling thing that Bournemouth have done for years, you know. So, and when he was back, he was at Southampton as well, wasn't he? I think,
yeah.
As well. And same there, absolutely the same player there. Absolute pest. So I can actually understand somebody being that annoyed with him already in you know, that part of the game. But it's just a punch. It's just punched him in the face, you know. Yeah. We were lucky to get away with that.
We'd have had no complaints if he'd been sent off, put it that way.
No, and I honestly would have expected it to go further. I could totally sympathise with the person sitting there on VAR because they're like, well, the ref hasn't given anything, so I've now got to do the whole, I've got to find specific, like, I've got to prove he intended to do that. And you can't prove that. You can think it. You can think, well, what else was he doing? But, you know, you then can't give somebody a yellow or a red card every time they clench their fists randomly and happen to connect. But
yeah, the only person what knows is Joachim himself.
Yeah, and honestly, everybody else. but you know, you're right. You can't 100% assume an intent. But I am going.
Although
to.
I did see, I did read his lips, and he said, "Have that, you pest."
Anyway, so weird one that. We'll move on. So perhaps got a little fortunate there, but you know, we built up a good deal of momentum in the game. So I think if anyone's sort of only really seen the first goal in highlights, it really doesn't do it justice. And I think Palace have got the full 90 minutes available on the app, and I would encourage you at the very least to go back and watch the whole thing because it must have been 30 passes. Easily in my head, perhaps even more. But you know, I don't know if everybody took a touch of the ball, but it would have been pretty close as well. We were really patient. We, you know, the quality of the passing was great, even in the sort of fairly slow passing around the back as we moved people around and waited for that opportunity. But then, you know, the change of pace, the one touch stuff, the interaction there, and then obviously the amazing skill from Wilf to take three players out.
Can I just interrupt there?
Mm.
Anybody who says that Wilf's already peaked only has to look at that, and I'll say, actually, might have a bit more left in him.
Oh, I mean, look, it's vintage Wilf. And obviously, I know he got injured, and that was a horrible thing. But it actually, you know, partly there was a large part of the response on social media that actually ruined my mood for a little bit, because so many people after the second Ezra goal were saying things like, move over Wilf, your time is up, and all this kind of stuff. I'm just like, no, that's, you can enjoy one thing without saying that kind of crap to one of the best players ever to put on a Palace shirt, if not the best. So I didn't like that at all. Even if, you know, we're moving from one era to another, which is likely. You're quite right, Nick. Doing what he did there, and the way he played up until he got injured, the way he played that whole game, he was outstanding in my view.
It was like he was against Leicester before he got injured as well.
Yeah.
But it didn't affect us, which is a good thing. That it used to affect us without Wilf, and we're comfortable without him now. And,
yeah.
I hope I'm not kind of preempting a season without Wilf next season.
No, I think
we did question when he went off, would that be the last we saw of him?
Right now, I honestly think it is, and that's the shame of it. But, you know, obviously people will get to see him at the end of the season, I'm sure, in the game against Forest, when everybody comes out and does the lap of honour at the end and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure, you know, you'll get to see Wilf again, but I think that might be the last ball he kicks for Palace.
Do you think we'll see Roy do his second farewell speech as well? We'll come on later in the programme.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I'm sure he can just reuse the first. It'll be fine.
What was just as good with that first goal, as good as the turn that Wilf did was Ayew's deft little flick. Mm. Oh, it was sublime.
Yeah.
Absolutely sublime. Knew exactly where Ezra was.
Yeah, and a cruel person would suggest that he didn't get as much on it as he thought he did, and he was trying to, and he was actually trying to do a little flicked finish. Because a cruel person, that's me. I get across my mind that he was doing that. But
and an ex-Newcastle goalkeeper was cruel as well.
Yeah. But, you know, he actually, you know, he has that in his locker. So I couldn't be sure he has it in his locker just to flick that ball in as well. But again, he led the line really well. And the fact that he did make a connection and it did go straight exactly where he needed it, it made it all the better as a goal. I said it on Twitter at the time, in terms of a team goal, in terms of the patience, the quality of passing, the way we moved Bournemouth about to create the gaps, it was instinctive. It was, you know, highly, highly professional in what we did. But it also just showcased the amount of talent we have in the team. You know, it's an outstanding team when it's on form and when they're playing with that freedom and they're playing with that confidence. You know, unfortunately for Patrick Vieira, the team lost that confidence. They lost the freedom that they were playing with under him the previous year. It became very static and, you know, bad results will do that for you, unfortunately, and lack of confidence will do that. And
interestingly, you know, Vieira was on Sky today, punditing, is that a verb? Punditing,
yeah, sure.
On the Arsenal Brighton game, and was saying, yeah, the only way you're going to win is if you go at teams. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yes, all right, Patrick.
But I genuinely think that, I don't think for one second that he was trying to stop Palace doing that. I think he was trying to solve problems in other areas of the team. He was trying to, you know, he had a good system. Then it got a little bit worked out, and he was trying to find a way of getting back to it. But, you know, Eze is the fantastic example of, you know, what can happen when a manager has one idea about how to play and your face doesn't quite fit. You know, Eze didn't have a role for Vieira. You know, he didn't, the role that, and it seems, you know, it's almost splitting hairs in terms of, you know, Vieira did play a player in a similar position, but in terms of the role and responsibility, he could never say to Eze, just do what you do best.
I'd argue when you've got a player of that caliber as a manager, it's up to you to fit them in somehow.
Well, it is
changing goals,
but you know, that's an interesting point, isn't it? And we will never know for sure. We can only speculate. I would speculate that Vieira's view on it would be, well, Eze never showed him that he was that player. He'd come back from a serious injury, and his form was never really got to that level where he was playing with that freedom and that confidence to warrant building the system around him. But it feels like a stupid move now, because it's not like, you know, Roy's done anything dramatic. He knows the player. So he was able to come in and say, hey, go back to what you were doing before. And that's why it's worked out so well. He's been able to do that with several players. Just say, look, you know, we know what works. I'm familiar with you. You're familiar with me. Let's just do the things that work.
That sounds like a song.
We can make it a song. If anyone at home wants to make that into a song. Actually, you know, Nick, you spend a lot of time mucking around on SoundCloud and stuff. Just, you know, have a go at that.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
There were other, he's already mixing it, the producer. There were another couple of notable moments in the first half. You said at the beginning a couple of moments of magic. I do hope one of them that you were thinking of was Ward doing his Cruyff turn, because that just filled me with so much joy. I watched it 17 times on repeat on Twitter earlier.
Yes, it's fantastic. He has that every now and then. He's throughout his time at Palace, he turns into Wardinho. And that's just how it is. It's always been that way. He has those skills.
The 20 minutes against Tottenham, he was doing it.
Yeah. Joel Ward is a very, very good footballer, always has been. But in terms of Premier League right backs contributing the way that they need to, you know, he's certainly decent, but he's not outstanding. And, you know, if you want to push up the league, you need outstanding. And, you know, but what a player for us he has been. Yes, it's one of the positions I firmly believe we need to improve going into next year. But, you know, what you've got to take joy in moments like that, whatever you think. And whatever I've said about Wardy, obviously after the defeat against Spurs, I was very critical of him. And I feel rightly so. I feel he's been involved in a lot of the goals we conceded. But great performance against Bournemouth. And I had a lot of enjoyment seeing that moment repeated over and over again.
The other first half moment, and you Bournemouth playing fans complaining all over social media about the punch, as well as complaining about the gantry that the TV people have put in. So if you're in the back row of the half, you can, you know, it's real letterbox stuff.
I remember being up there, yes.
And you do feel sorry for the Palace fans in the half, or anyway, not the away fans.
No,
they deserve everything they get. The other moment was the penalty on Wilf.
Yeah.
Was it a penalty? Because, again, up the other end of the pitch, it all happens very quickly. You don't get the benefit of the replay in the ground. Was it a Stonewall pen?
For me, yeah, absolutely. We had the, you know, the, if you look at the highlights and the commentary from the game as well, it was kind of this thing of, oh, he's trying to pull his leg out of the way, so it's not a penalty. It's just like, what are you talking about?
He's trying to avoid injury.
He didn't mean to foul Wilf in the penalty area, therefore it's not a penalty. You're like, no, he's put his leg across him, missed the ball, and his leg has gone between Wilfried Zaha's legs and then made contact and tripped him up. You know, I know why the ref's not giving it, because the ref's looking at the kind of upper body position and the contact there, and he's seen Wilf go down like at an angle like he's been shoved. And, you know, because that's what I thought first time, seeing Wilf go to ground. But I don't know if you've noticed this, but this season in particular, Wilf stopped, you know, complaining. Like, he only, if he has been sort of nudged to the floor and there's not an awful lot of contact, he's not claiming a thing now. He's just getting up and getting on with it. So the fact that he got up and claimed like he always used to, you know, made me think, okay, well, something else has happened there. So looking at the replay, it's clear contact. It's a penalty. It's a foul. Anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul. So, you know, it seems madness not to give it in the penalty area. So that, you're right. We're talking about the red card. That's a game-changing moment. Obviously, this penalty would have been before that, I think. So that's a game-changing moment in itself. So, you know, maybe it evens out in that sense. And certainly we were the better team and won the game deservedly. So in the end,
incidentally, Will is turning into the new Chris Clark. Now he's 18. He wants to get his beer at half time. And he missed a goal. And that's the second one he's missed, because when we played Man United, he thought it was, he didn't realise Man United had scored for about 15 minutes of the second half.
Well, those were the best days, you know, from me when I was doing every game and drinking way too much. You know, there was always the best moments where somebody goes, geez, can't believe we're drawing this game. You're like, what? What are you talking about? When did they score?
It's in big numerals on the scoreboard right in front of you.
Yeah. Well, if you've had a proper day out of the football, you can't read that scoreboard. So that's what I say.
Yeah.
Those days are long behind me though, Nick.
Yeah. Second half was more of the same. Were Bournemouth on the beach, do you think, with all the effluent flowing into the English Channel as it has been lately?
You don't know, do you? They didn't look like they had... they didn't have an answer to what we were doing, and it didn't look like some of them cared. I think for them, when you think, consider the job that Gary O'Neill's done there, you know, it is job done. It is. There's no. It's not like when Roy came in for Palace, there was a lot of games ahead, and we were underperforming. It's not like Bournemouth were underperforming. You know, Gary O'Neill's job was to take over and do his best to get some points on the board and keep the club in the Premier League. And it was a kind of, it's almost a flip of a coin moment as to whether or not they would do it. So when they hit that 39 point mark, for them, that was job done. There is no, we're pushing up the league, we should be finishing higher. There's none of that. It's, you know, it's absolutely where they should be.
Did you see that article in the week comparing the ownership of Bournemouth and Palace?
Only the kind of headline aspect of it, because I stopped my subscription to that service. But like, I saw the headline article, and look, yeah. I don't really understand the point of the discussion. You know, I understood the similarity is we both have
American owners.
Thanks for that. Look, I you know, maybe if I read the full article, I'd understand the point that was being made.
Yeah, it's kind of that we've got owners, although the Bournemouth owner has got interest in other clubs, with Texter having so many interests and Blitzer and the other reindeer bloke.
Harris. The little known reindeer.
The little known reindeer.
Don't hear about him much.
He had a pink nose. Yeah. And I know that's quite a club. Yeah. And just how they were kind of facing against each other in the Belgian second division as owners.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is all a bit weird. And just the fact that they're looking to invest somewhere else and how that's going to kind of stifle us a little bit.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot to be said about our ownership model, but you can say, if you go into the detail at most clubs, there's always, differing agendas and that kind of stuff, and lots of boardroom takeovers and things like that. You know, remember the situation at Arsenal over the course of about 20 years was incredibly boring, over who was going to take control and who was doing this and who was doing that. It's just, you know, and it's that point with Palace now. We've been in the Premier League for be a decade soon, won't it? Coming up to a decade.
Yeah.
Which is incredible, incredible achievement by everybody concerned. And, you know, we're you know, established Premier League club, but every time we start afresh, every time we start a season again, you know, that first thought is how do we not get relegated this year? And there's lots of people who will want to change that. But it's a really hard thing to do. And you think from somebody like, you know, from obviously the model that came in, there were lots of investors that came in with Blitzer and Harris, you know, who took small amounts. And the whole idea was obviously that we would transition the club from what they were to an established Premier League club that wasn't fighting relegation. But, you know, you can think that, but doing it is so difficult when there's so many other clubs trying to do the exact same thing. And every now and then another club gets massive investment, you know, and the more clubs you start stacking with huge amounts of investment, the harder that job gets. So, you know, you're always looking over your shoulder. Okay. You know, what's the next club that's going to come and be, you know, the new Man City, the new Newcastle, whatever. Whatever happened to the old Castle? That's what I say.
That's the sort of shit I'd come out with, Hambo. I'm very disappointed.
It just bothers me. Very disappointed. Yeah, I'm sorry, but it just bothers me. It bothers me.
But it's interesting, really, when you look at Spit Brighton, Tony Bloom really gambled a lot on getting it right. And if it had gone wrong, they'd have really been in the shit. And I think what's hampering Palace, or maybe not because it makes it sensible, is Parrish is so aware of the administrations we've had. He just doesn't want to see that happen again. So perhaps he's a little bit too cautious in splashing cash.
I think that we are. Look, there's already debt. You know, there's debt at Palace, large amounts of debt to owners, shareholders, etc. Because that's just how the football model works. You know, the value of the club allows you to structure debt with the people that own. It's just that's it. That's just what people do. But you know, we don't have the funds to compete with a lot of the clubs in the league. But, you know, Brighton have done it a very different way with the players that they've targeted. And you think that their success from a scouting perspective, and they're doing a lot of success out of South America, but whoever came up with their kind of method has done an incredible job, because they keep finding players and they don't pay huge sums of money for them. You know, you tend to get between 5 and 15 million spent on players, and a year later they're being talked about as, you know, 50, 60, 70 million pound players. Now we've done that with, I mean, Eze for sure, at least say, yeah, 100%, right? We've done that by trying to pick the best of the Championship to some degree, which is it's a great thing to do, but you're competing with a lot of other people. But you know, think about the sheer number that's come through at Brighton is incredible. But look, we are doing similar things. You know, we brought a lot of talented youngsters in. You know, we got a little bit going on in Ireland for sure. We brought some really interesting players over from Ireland. We've got a couple of young lads in from Scotland. So that's where we're shopping. And it doesn't mean we're doing the wrong thing, and we'll have to see what happens in two or three years. But Brighton started that process quite a long time ago, and they're still getting it right. And the managerial changes as well. You know, you think about that. They've managed to develop that philosophy and that system there, which means they don't get hit badly by managerial changes. You know, they've done the right thing there. So
we haven't failed.
We haven't. No, you're absolutely right.
We're still here 10 years later.
I know. And the trouble is, if I don't get to finish my point, I'm going to end up like, oh, Chris was praising Brighton a lot. I've said a lot of nice things about Brighton, but they're still, you know, I think they've got really lucky as well. I do. And I do think, you know, the it's not that long ago that the kind of brand of football that they were playing was boring as hell. It was, you know, what Potter was doing was boring, and you read everything on their boards. The fans weren't gone because he wasn't getting wins. He wasn't exciting. And, you know, they got, I think they made a couple of astute signings that paid off, which if they hadn't, I think, you know, Potter would have gone and Brighton would have changed their model, and who knows what would have happened. So I do think that they got lucky as well.
Yeah. Should we talk about the second half?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you know, I don't think we need to talk too much more. We should talk about, obviously, Will Hughes' effort. Incredible volley. What a just phenomenal first goal for him that would have been. But what did you think about his performance overall?
I keep using the word every time it's mentioned, but he's tenacious, isn't he?
Mm.
And he gets in there, and he's a different player to Schlupp. I mean, I did miss Schlupp's surging runs, which Hughes didn't do, but he just seems so calm.
Yeah, he's
so calm. And I so wanted that goal to go in. Yeah. I mean, it was quite near the keeper, but if there's anybody you want to score, it's him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think he deserves it. I just wonder what he would be like with a run in the team. And that's not to say that I think anybody deserves to be dropped, and you're quite right to pick the part that we missed from Jeffrey Schlupp, because, again, a confident Jeffrey Schlupp running with the ball and pressing everybody and keeping that focus and that concentration. He's just done a wonderful job under Hodgson, for sure. I wonder what Hughes would give you with, you know, if he stayed fit and played 10 games in a row. I do wonder what he'd be able to deliver, because he's an incredibly talented footballer. You know, I was interested, we talked about it earlier in the season, but when he commented on the difference, you know, serious injury had made to him as a footballer, because he was, as a young player, he was this, you know, dynamic, all-action attacking midfielder with incredible technique. And, you know, that is not really what he is now, in terms of how he plays a game. He's much more, you know, a patrolling kind of midfield general, yeah? One of those, Nick.
Yes,
remember the
definitely.
Midfield generals. So yeah, I think there's a place for that. I think with Luka moving on, unlikely to get a new contract, is he? You know, I think that's the role for Hughes. I think he can be that, with just probably a bit more technical ability on the ball. So I think there's a place for him in the Palace squad and potentially in the team as well. support in that process. But yeah, it was, I thought he played pretty well. And I like the fact that he seemed to be a bit sharper and a bit fitter than he had been in previous appearances.
Indeed. And it's the attitude again, isn't it? I better do what the management team want me to do, rather than being told, right, you know, the leash is off you all, go and do what you can and enjoy your football. And they are all enjoying their football. That's the other thing I've noticed.
Yeah, it's
Palace under Roy too, is they seem very, very happy playing.
Yeah, Roy too. Is that what and we're that, going with, isn't it?
And that team togetherness and cohesion is back, and that had gone, completely gone.
No, it's not. It's, I'm trying to think of a non-cliche way of saying it, but I don't think I can. It's not rocket science, is it, in terms of getting a team playing with smiles on their faces, you know, as a unit, playing as a team unit, backing each other up when they need to, you know, the kind of freedom of expression for the talent, you know, the more talented attacking players, the solid base behind them. It's not massively complicated, but it has to come with that belief and that confidence that you're doing the right things. And players like Zaha, Eze, Elise, and Ayew even, you know, they have to start the game believing that they're going to create and they're going to score, and that they are good enough to take on, you know, two players at a time, three, if you will, beat them in the penalty area and create that opportunity. They have to believe that they can do it.
Four, if you're Eze about to score.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, and let's go on to that. You know, he's finished really well in the first half, but, you know, he's in and out of games as a, he's not quite the luxury player of old. He's not like a Darren Ambrose who would just pop up and do something outstanding and then, you know, just go through the motion. And again, not deliberately. That was the player he was. He would use his talent at the right times, and he was a fantastic player for Palace. But, you know, at times you were like, okay, we have to carry him a little bit here because he's not going to put in a crunching tackle in the centre of midfield either. But you're not really talking about where you are. It's not quite that with Eze. He does know how to defend and put in a challenge. He does know how to, you know, to press. He can do that, but it should not be his focus ever. And it's interesting hearing him talk, because it's clear that he felt Vieira hemmed him in with that, with the kind of, you have to do the other bit, which is funny because it's a Roy trait. to take an attacking player and get them to focus on their defence. That's what he did too much in his previous stint. And now he's come back in and said, actually, you're doing way too much of that. Your focus should be on attacking. Go do that. And it's just, you know, that's why we as fans get frustrated. We know what Eze is good at doing. We know what Elise is good at doing. We want to see him do it. And we need to have the rest of the team do their jobs to enable that to happen. So, there, you know, I think the goal itself, there's two fantastic points to talk about there, because it gives us the discussion about the two outstanding players, of the three outstanding players on the day, as Zaha had to go off. And that's Elise. He could have let the ball go out for a throw, I think. And I think he considered it, but just sort of got it down, rolled it out of his feet, and just it's a fantastic crossfield pass straight into Eze's feet, who was obviously on that left-hand side at the time because Wilford had to go off. So, but to go from that point, when you think about the belief that's in Eberechi Eze at the moment, to go from the point of receiving that ball to finish it the way he did, my cat agreed. I don't know if you heard that. But I hope it made the recording. But that strike itself, it was outstanding. And Nick, you know, at the game, I assume, you know, that was an outstanding moment as well.
Yeah, it was. How at least they saw him there. Well, they're getting an understanding. I can remember back a couple of seasons ago when we thought that you couldn't have Eze and Elise in the same team because they were too similar. But actually, having them both in the team just gives us loads more options and more headaches for the opposition. I hope your cat was purring like we were as a team yesterday. Was that the noise that your cat was making?
No, it was more of
purring like a well-oiled engine.
We were. No, if we were doing what he was doing, it would have been staring at me, making a weird whirring sound. So luckily we weren't doing that.
The other thing I wanted to say about the second half and a player who performed well is Decore is not getting booked. He's actually making tackles, winning the tackles, and not taking players out when he's doing it. What's changed there? Because he's the same player. And he's still making the tackles. How come he's not fouling anymore? I mean, what's the difference?
I don't know. I wish I could answer that question for you. Like a bit of, you know, I think obviously the more games you play, the more tackles you make, hopefully the better you get, I guess, you know, that's the pace of the game. But it's hard when you look at a game like this match, you know, and you think about what Bournemouth are putting into it, you know, is the intensity of that game going to push into the kind of making those last ditch challenges and, you know, fouling as much? Probably not. You're probably not going to have that situation, although it did get a little tasty at one point. Actually, I did want to talk about that. Sorry, Nick, as a bit of a diversion since you brought it up, but I actually felt like...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We played Bournemouth a little bit at their own game in this match. I think I wouldn't say we practiced the dark arts particularly, but we had a bit of edge about us that we had the edge that was missing. That was one of the biggest reasons Vieira ended up being sacked, was we lost our edge completely. We were focusing really very much on trying to find the right combinations in playing, and we really did leave that kind of occasionally needed nastiness, that occasionally needed bit of time wasting here and there, those kinds of things that change the momentum of a game. And I think even if Bournemouth had come into this game all guns blazing, I think they would have found us too strong an opponent, because, you know, we didn't allow them to get into rotational fouling. And I have to say, that's the whole point of having the front players that we've got. Having Zaha, IU, excuse me, Elise and Eze playing together means that you should not be able to rotationally foul us to stop us playing. You might be able to take Zaha out of the game. You might be able to take even Zaha plus Eze out of a game, but Elise and IU should destroy you. You know, that's how it should be. And I really do think, like, you know, that's the one thing from the first half up until we scored the goal, I was quite bored and it felt like a real end of season game. But when we gave the game that kind of shot in the arm, the only thing that I was thinking about prior to that was we've actually mixed it up with them pretty well. They don't have the physical beating of us. They're not running harder. They're not fouling more. They're not kicking us out of our stride. We're doing that to them. And I liked it.
One more player that I'd like to highlight before we kind of wrap things up for this shorter pod is Gaye running forward with the ball, carrying the ball forward from defence. Seems to be doing that a bit more, combined with Anderson's long balls, which seems be hitting the mark once again. He went a bit off boil, but those two in the centre of defence, you know, you feel sorry for Richards. He is a quality player as well. And if Gaye was to go, I think Richards would be an able replacement for him. But just, it's that confidence.
It's confidence, but it's also a failing of Bournemouth. You know, people at times have worked us out in the sense that they have managed to press our centre-backs to stop them, like, you know, stop the supply into Anderson and get tight on him. If he gets the ball, he won't play the long balls. You know, pin Gaye back, he won't make runs forward. But when he, you know, they are both there to do those two things. It's in their locker to be able to do that. And it was nice to see, but it was a failing of our opponents to press us enough in the final third to do that. It's good. It's a good thing to highlight. And the better teams won't really allow us to do that. But then it's up to us to find either other ways of playing or to impose ourselves enough that they can't stop us. You know. But I'm sure we'll come to that again and talk about that in the future. But only obviously a couple of games left of the season. Just before we do, and I, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about Alisse, and I just want to say that, you know, with every game he plays, he looks better and better. And the noises sort of coming out of his teammates and the club in general are, you know, this is an outstanding player. But I just wanted to kind of address the fact that some people are talking about Wilf in the past tense and saying that, you know, this new generation has come in and, you know, he can move on and all that kind of stuff. I'm making a huge assumption that we're going to be able to keep Alisse, keep Eze, keep Mark Gay. You know, those are going to be really, really hard things to do. There's enough teams out there that, you know, that want those three, for example.
I've heard that Will was telling me yesterday that Paris Saint-Germain want Alisse to replace Messi. It made me laugh.
That interpretation, yeah, is quite amusing. But, you know, so two things here. I've got to be careful how I say this. The first one is, you know, they are reporting that they are trying their best to bring in some younger players. And they, you know, it appears that Alisse is on the shortlist of the type of young talent that they want to bring in. That's the link there, I think. But, you know, I will say this now, if Eze's kind of trajectory continues, he has the ability to be talked about as an outstanding footballer. Whether he has the ability to be talked about like Messi, probably not. You know, he's Messi. You know, it's just what it, you know, he's probably a verb all on his own, you know, he's incredible.
But I'm sure he meant Alisse then, not Eze, but yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean Alisse. You're quite right. Eze, you know, got to get in the England squad though, right? Anyway, look, yeah. we're gonna wrap this up. It was nice to talk about a really good Palace win, and it was nice to have a good chat, wasn't it, Nick? That's the main thing.
Yes, nice to hear about Winchester.
Yeah, of course.
Have to go there one of these days and try their pies.
Yeah, do it. Do it. It's heartily recommended. And do try out Proudfoot and Co. as well. Anyway, next up, obviously, is
Fulham.
Fulham away. Last away game of the season. Preview team obviously be around to talk about that one before the final game against Forest, which I shall be at, Nick. And it'd be very nice to see you there.
Yes, I shall be in the Goat House pre-game for Forest, I'd imagine. So
it's a Goat House?
Goat House Shelverdine on Norwood High Street, just up from the clock tower. The pubs were remarkably empty before the game yesterday, whether it was because of the train strike or whether everybody got to the ground mega early in case there were ticketing problems, I don't know. But it was really weird. The streets seemed quiet.
Yeah, it was a train strike because it's 100%. It's a reason I wasn't there. I just couldn't face the hassle. So there you go. So, can't wait for that one. So check out everything we do over on YouTube. Search Back of the Nest there. Find out what DR's up to. Outstanding content as always there. All of our socials, just search Back of the Nest. You'll find us on everything, even that TikTok, Nick, that all the kids like. You know that one?
Yeah, I'm a bit fed up with our MySpace coverage, but, you know.
Sorry about that, but it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to keep up on the cutting edge. Our Bebo account is just ruined. I'm so sorry. Yeah. But anyway, we'll move on. So thanks to everyone. Plenty of people did get in touch. Apologies we didn't get to it. It was a bit of a rambling show today. But what's wrong with a bit of rambling, eh?
Especially when it's rambling.
Yeah, that was the inference there for people to make their own conclusions. Anyway, lovely. Thank you very much, everybody. Cheers to Mikey for producing, Nick for joining me today, and you for listening as always. And until next time, come on, you Palace.
Eagle.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.